I'm Christian Ponder, and this is the NFL Players Second Acts podcast. What's going on, everybody? I'm Charles Peanut Tillman, and this is the NFL Players Second Acts podcast. And with me, as always, I got my guy, Roman Harper. You giving me Miami Vice vibes right now with this outfit. I'm loving it. It's dope.
Hey, man, appreciate it, man. It's two places you can wear white pants 365 days out of the year. Miami's number one, and yeah. Vegas is number two. So, boom, I'm in.
All right, so we got a good one. NFC North, this guy, 12th pick overall in the 2011 draft. Florida State, played 6 years in the league, Broncos, 49ers, and the Vikings. He is a smart guy, bachelor's degree in finance, got his MBA all from Florida State. He recently founded The Post, a private membership network connecting athletes turned business leaders. Ladies and gentlemen, Christian Ponder.
Appreciate it. Nice. The applause.
Hold on. Like you said, like he's a smart guy. Like other guys aren't.
I didn't. No. Here's no. Let me click. So two and a half years.
Some guys aren't.
Okay. Two and a half years. That's impressive.
That is true.
I mean, it was. Yeah. I love Florida State, but it wasn't Stanford. So
Check it though. Yeah. But check it though. Two and a half. I graduated in 3.5. Trust me, I ain't the smartest tool in the thing where you keep all the twos.
The shit.
But yeah, again, I did mine in 3.5, not 2.5. And you're traveling, playing like it's a lot.
Yeah, so I'm smarter than Peanut. So that's basically what I'm saying.
That's a lot to do. That's all I'm saying. That's a lot to do.
I agree. First of all, just tell me this. What was your first welcome to the NFL moment?
I think it was actually playing against the Bears. And it was my rookie year, and Donovan, you know, I was the lockout year, right? So got drafted. We didn't do anything till training camp, and we didn't have a veteran guy. So like, what was it? I think less than a week before training camp started, finally lockout ended. They agreed to the CBA.
Yeah.
And so they immediately signed Donovan McNabb, and Donovan came in. He was a veteran guy. Got to learn from him. And I don't know, sixth game of the year, I think we played in Chicago, and we got smoked. And so I went in fourth quarter, maybe even late third. And I just remember I had ran up the middle, and the first tackle I ever had in the NFL, I got tackled by Brian Urlacher. And I was like, oh, all right. That's pretty cool. I grew up watching Brian, you know? And so that was a pretty cool moment. And just to get in and play, like that was, it was awesome.
But was it like a starstruck moment too when you got?
It wasn't. It was kind of like one of those things, like I got hit and I'm jogging back in the huddle and I look back and I was like, oh, those are like her, you know? So it wasn't like, you know, it's like once you get out there, like you don't get starstruck anymore.
Right.
It was just more of like, wow, I made this moment, you know, like I'm here. So, you know.
Do you remember playing the Saints? Do you remember going against Christian?
You guys beat us at home 2011.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think you had two sacks, but one of your sacks
was a penalty.
You got a
They always hating on me, dog.
Well, they said you were a dirty player.
I agree. That's what they said.
All
defensive guys are dirty. I mean,
look, I'm just glad because I think later on that year that you guys dome broke.
That was the year before.
We were supposed to play y'all.
That was the year before.
And they had to move the game.
Yeah,
it was not fun.
I had
to play outside in Minnesota, like out at University of Minnesota.
They're building a new stadium. So they tore down the old stadium and we had to play at University of Minnesota. For 2 years. And I remember we played the Jets. I think it was the Jets at home. And it was, you know, a high of 11 degrees. And I remember, like, you know, the offensive line guys, right? They're all tough. They don't wear sleeves. So I'm like, well, I can't wear sleeves going out here for warmups. I couldn't throw the ball because, like, my arm was numb. I'm like, you idiot. Like, so I had to go back in and put sleeves on. So that was good.
But that's cool. The thing that people don't realize. So we were the same way in Chicago. I'm sure they're the same way in Green Bay. Like, it's a mindset. Like you just, we gonna tough it out. We in the cold. First time I did it, like you, I froze.
Yeah.
I had to put some sleeves on. And then after that, the defensive cats, the Brian Urlachers, they would not leave me alone. And then it was just like, all right, I gotta man up and just, I gotta get used to this. I just gotta embrace the cold. Did you wear gloves when you played or no?
No, I didn't. I tried it. I never got the confidence that like, cause it felt different, right?
It's and a confidence
so,
thing, huh?
Yeah. So if you get comfortable with it and you're confident with it, fine. But I never did it. And so I would try and practice and it just, Yeah, you make one bad throw and it's like, all right, I got to take this off, right? Like, then it is in your head and you couldn't do it anymore.
What do you remember most about that 2011 season with Adrian Peterson and just handing the ball off and just watching him just create poetry in motion?
Yeah, obviously he was unbelievable and still like looks like he can go play. And he, I think the first thing that stood out to me was like in training camp, like walkthrough, like the guy has one speed, right? Even in walkthrough, it's like he's ripping your arm off when you're handing the ball. And he was, and obviously seeing highlights, I grew up in Texas. And so seeing his high school highlights, see him go to Oklahoma and watching his career and then being able to play with him. I mean, he was such a beast, but also one of the most humble and nice guys to be around. And just the way that he went about his work and then see him come back from the ACL and, you know, have 2000 yards. Like he, it was tremendous to be his teammate and have a front row seat to watching him play.
Now, did he ever... Obviously, we all know about the handshake, right?
Yeah.
We were talking about that a little bit earlier before you got here.
Yeah.
What is your first thought when you shook his hand for the first time?
Yeah.
Like, introduction, introduce yourself.
Yeah. And you're just like, I don't know if he does it on purpose. is he just simulating his like dominance, you know, like establishing that he's the alpha male in this relationship, you know, like, but it's like, dang, Adrian, like, but that's like, that was everything. Like everything was at a whole nother level.
So for y'all listening and watching,
it's common knowledge in the NFL.
It's not even a myth. Everyone knows it. Everyone's just like, I've never shaken his hand, but I kind of want to shake his hand because I heard it's so strong.
Like he will break somebody's hand. If you're not ready, you got to be ready. Or just don't try.
It's got to be on purpose. Like he's got to know what he's doing, right? Like it's
I think he knows that everybody knows about it too, and so he just keeps it going.
He just won't go.
It's funny because you talked about how he was in, you know, even during warmups, like walkthroughs. I saw him at the Pro Bowl practice when I actually got to play in it. And I was like, I was watching him practice. And of course, some guys got flip-flops on. Yeah. Nobody's going hard.
So chill.
Yeah. It's like way dialed down. Not him.
No.
And I'm looking at him. I'm like, this dude might be the prettiest running back I've ever seen in my life. He looks like a thoroughbred. He said, if I play for Minnesota, I give him the ball 45 times a game.
Yeah. I mean, why not? You know, but what's so interesting about him is like, and no knock on Adrian, but have you ever seen him like shoot a basketball or throw a football?
No.
Like he's the definition of like.
That's a knock. Yeah, we can knock on him. Keep it going. Yeah.
All right.
Keep it going.
Like one of the best athletes to ever be in the running back position, right? Like a unbelievable athlete. But cannot shoot a basketball and cannot throw a ball.
You really? Know? He's like, just a football. Like
just a running back, right? Like in the scope of his athleticism and running back, he's at the pinnacle, right? But like, you know, watch him shoot a basketball and you're like, dang. You know, like.
I did not know that. I never guessed that.
Yeah. Me neither.
Sorry, Adrian. That's
awesome. Really? That reminds me of like a gymnast. Like a lot of gymnasts, they can only do what they do.
Yeah.
Like you put them in another sport, they're like.
Terrible. They run with their arms like.
Well, I judge like someone's athletic ability of like, can you throw a ball? Right? Like the most basic athletic move to me is like, everyone can run, but can you throw? I guess not everyone can run. You talked about it. Like, some people need to have friends that'll tell them the truth. They're like, you look like an idiot when you run. But like, my assumption is Adrian started playing running back in peewee football at a very young age, realized he was really good, and that was like his sole focus for a long time. So he probably didn't play basketball growing up or baseball or whatever.
How did he not? Basically, he's like Smalls from the Sandlot. You're killing me, Smalls. You're killing me, Adrian. Just, like, come on, you just
so would he? Does he always just run the ball back? Like the kid, like you know, you tell the kid, the little kid, like don't throw it back, like they do, and like camps. He's like he just always runs the ball back.
Yeah,
that's crazy. I'm like, dude, you played in the league forever, just never learned how to throw a ball.
So let's get away from football. We'll pivot and we'll get into the your second act. So naturally, we all retire. We have to do something, you know, outside of football. And particularly you got into business. You got your MBA from Florida State. Let me ask you this. What really inspired you to get that MBA and go the direction in the business field?
Talk about also getting it while in college playing football.
Graduating my undergrad 2.5 years, like I took a redshirt year, so I was at Florida State for 5 years. I came in with a bunch of AP credits from high school. So I think I started off pretty much as a sophomore when I got, stepped foot on campus. And so, I had interest in finance. My dad was in finance growing up. And so that's what I figured I want to do is like a generic business degree. Like I knew at some point, football was going to be over. And so did that. Finished pretty quickly and thought like, okay, it would be great to get my MBA. Now, I do wish if I did it differently, I kind of got my MBA to check the box of like getting my MBA and having a master's degree instead of like actually valid. Because they suggest like, you know, when you go get your MBA, hopefully you have some working experience and then you go back and get your MBA. And I think I would have appreciated it more if I would have done that. But I got it done. I actually finished that and then started a second master's in sports administration, sports management. I don't think I'll ever go back and finish that. But yeah, so I knew, right? I didn't know if I was ever make the NFL. I didn't know how long my football career was going to be. So I knew, it was, you know, while I was in school, I had to take advantage of a free education and or an earned education. And so that was a focus for me.
How far are you along in the second master's degree?
I think I'm about halfway through it, you know, and I'll be honest, like when I finished my MBA, I tried to go back into undergrad. I tried to take the undergrad sports management, just get a bachelor's degree because I thought like I earned it to coast for the rest of my educational career at Florida State. And I made a comment in a newspaper over the summer that said basically that like I earned my MBA, you know, I'm trying to make this, you know, this last summer in fall of my senior year, like just solely focused on football. So I'm trying to take it easy. I signed up for the undergrad sports management degree and the head of the sports administration department, read it. And I got
they hate it because you're just coasting, huh?
I got an email and I had to go meet with them and they're like, look, you can't take the undergrad, you have to take the master's. And so basically like they said, you're overqualified to go back and get your bachelor's degree. So they made me take the master's program. And then I swear, like all the professors had a vendetta against me. Like, you know, like it was like the worst I ever performed in school. Like it was like every grade was terrible. So yeah, so I don't know if I'll ever go back.
Yeah, a little bit of advice, guys. Hey, look, if you're ever out there,
don't burn bridges. don't burn bridges.
Don't say that. Yeah. Don't talk about you just want to coast.
Real G's move in silence.
There's a difference between book smarts and street smarts, right? So like I had the book smarts, but actually opening my mouth and saying that was a dumb move.
You mentioned something, Christian, I thought was really interesting, which was you wished that you would have like had a little bit of work experience before you got your MBA. So then you could probably apply some things to each other. I was one of those that didn't finish school and I was in school 5 years and I was like two classes short. I went back after my second year in the NFL and it was so much easier finishing up my business degree because everything that we had questions about, I just used like football as an example. And once you're understanding like the football is a business at the highest level, all this normal stuff that we're talking about, you can do it. And it for just sure. applies right over. What do you think about that? Going back and like, that's what you admire to do. And I actually got to live it. It's kind of cool.
Well, I think you also have probably a greater appreciation for it, right? Yeah. I think when we're playing, it's like, well, football is my sense of my purpose. That's why I'm here. I'm just going to class to make sure I'm eligible to play, right? And you don't necessarily value. And also, like, right, like football requires so much of you. And so you are often trying to just check the box and get it done so that you can take care of the things on the field. And so I think going back afterwards, I think you just have a great appreciation for the actual learnings that you're experiencing in school. And, you know, it makes it more enjoyable.
We'll be back in a minute. So tell me about this. I mean, talking about things that are enjoyable, the post.
Yeah.
How did you transition into getting into that? Yeah. Maybe talk about a little bit, how was the transition after leaving football and then going in this direction?
Yeah. So I, you know, on paper, right? MBA, got my undergrad in finance. Like on paper, I thought I had it together. I knew I wanted to go into finance. You know, my last year in the league was 16 with the Niners. And then we moved to New York City in August 2017. Thought if I'm going to be in finance, why not move to financial capital of the world? Started on the wealth management pathway and did some other things, did angel investing, got into venture capital, like short stint at a small hedge fund on the business development side, and quickly realized that the transition sucked, you know, like it was hard. And so I kind of started.
Were you like feeling empty while you're doing all these things?
It was a void, right? Like I had this void of like, I've been an athlete my whole life, right? Yeah, it's a huge part of my identity and how I operate in this world. And suddenly it was over, or it felt like it was over. It felt like it now was just reduced to a past version of myself. And more importantly, and you guys know this, as you talk to so many guys, like I missed the locker room, right?
Yeah.
Like I've been a part of a team in a locker room, again, surrounded by athletes. Athletes are my people, the people I have most in common with and enjoy being around the most. And it was the first time in my life where I was formally removed from that group. And so, it was hard. And I think what I also missed is like, I benefited from being around athletes, right? When you're in a room where everyone's defined by their work ethic and their grittiness and their competitiveness and their ambition and drive, you know, it's behavioral psychology. Like, we are influenced by the people we surround ourselves with. And even in a place like New York City, which is full of hardworking, highly ambitious people, I couldn't find things to fill the void. I joined different clubs and networks, like trying to find this home, this replacement for the locker room. And I couldn't find it. And so that was kind of the seed starting to plant for this idea of the Post, which was really, how do we rebuild the locker room for athletes, right? Like, our whole thesis is, number one, you know, there's so many transferable skills that sports develops in athletes, right? And there's so much compelling data around the outperformance of athletes in business. People who've played college sports. So our definition of athletes, right? We're exclusive to athletes, turn business leaders. Our definition of athletes, anyone who played college sports.
Right.
And so people who've played college sports in the United States only make up roughly 1.5% of the population. It's a little over 5 million people.
Oh, wow. That's not a lot.
And yet that 1.5% accounts for 52% of women in the C-suite today. 15 of the last 21 U.S. presidents were college athletes. And an outsized number of Fortune 500 CEOs are college athletes. And so, you know, society still views athletes, right, as the dumb jock mentality, right? Right. Like, you only went to school because you played football or sports or whatever. Like, your value is really high when you're on the field, and then it's steeply downhill when sports is over. And I think we all fight this uphill battle and this insecurity around entering new environments outside of sports and getting into business. And yet business is no different than sports. What made you successful, made you a great athlete in sports, makes you an exceptional business leader in business. And what was interesting, so I had this idea of like, well, what if we created a space for athletes, right? What if I created a home? Have you guys ever been to a Soho House before?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was sitting at Soho House. I joined Soho House in New York trying to find something to fill the void. Yeah,
you're searching.
And, yeah. And I, in 2019, I was sitting there one day like, hey, this place is beautiful. The vibe's cool. I feel so out of place here, right? These are not my people. And what if all these people in here were athletes? And that's where it started. What if we built a social club for athletes? That felt like it fell short when we started studying all this data around how athletes perform in business and how we had to actionize the community. Like, we're performance oriented people. We can't just hang out and grab a drink together. So we started studying other things like YPO and EO, some of these professional business networks that have been around for a really long time. And so that's what we did. It's like part social club, part professional network. We launched our professional network back in April. We opened up our first physical clubhouse space, our nod to Soho House in New York, back in September. And so it's been really cool. Like, 400 members cross country, 71% of our members at VP level above in business. We look at athletic resume compared with business resume. If your athletic resume looks like, hey, you were an 8-year professional athlete, we think that brings something to the table, right? Because we're trying to build this roster, right? We're trying to build people that bring something to the table that we can leverage each other, we can grow together. Like, how do you recreate this whole ecosystem of team sport where you had teammates that were there to push you and support you, hold you accountable, you know, coaches that helped you get better, right? The resources that helped you get better. And that was all about athletic potential. And this is all about all this business potential that all athletes possess. And we have a bunch of C-suite level people. Like, one of our members is the global CEO of Grey Group, a global ad agency. She was a softball player in college. We have the CMO of Daily Harvest, the smoothie company, who was a pole vaulter in Wisconsin. It's a really great group. But I wanted the locker room. And so we're just creating the locker room in a whole new way.
I think so I'm a Texas kid. I'm from Central Texas. And, you know, one of my coaches used to always say, football's a game of life. And I don't think you really understood what that was when you're, you know, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. Couldn't figure it out.
No.
And then he would give you like a little story, you know, football, you know, it's a game of life. You know, it's, you know, you got to go out there. You got to do the job. You lose the game. What happens if you married kids, you get fired? You can walk on your family. So you lose a game, you can walk on your family, your team. So that was one of the, I guess, lessons that I kind of learned from football. What are some of the lessons that from playing sports that you learned that you can share or that you can apply to other aspects of your life?
Yeah, I think there's so many, right? There's so many skill sets and routines and structures that we benefited from as athletes that right. If you can recreate those things or lean into those things, or we talk about like, I think a lot of us try to shed that athlete identity when we're done playing because it's like it was only beneficial to my past. It's not necessarily beneficial to my future. Our whole idea is like, hell yeah, it is. Like, go be an athlete in business. Go be an athlete in marriage. Go be an athlete as a parent. Because what does that mean? It means Number one, it starts with a high level of self-awareness, right? We were always getting feedback. We're watching film of ourselves, right? Like getting coached. So you knew, number one, what you're doing well, but number two, more importantly, what weren't you doing well? What were the areas that I need to improve upon? And then you found like the long-term competitiveness. That was the motivation that sustained you to like get better in those specific areas. So you could perform better on the field for yourself and for your teammates. Combine that with like the target, that targeted effort, right? So like it's not enough to just work hard, right? You have to work hard in the specific areas that you need to improve upon. And the goals that you need to set for yourself or for your company or for yourself as an athlete. And so you got to chase after those things hard. And that's what you benefit from. And I think we kind of inherently know all these things. We don't necessarily think about them as athletes, but like you should be doing all those same things in every other area of your life, right? Like in business, as a business leader, what am I communicating well enough with my employees? Am I setting the right KPIs or goals for my company? If I'm fundraising, am I pitching well enough? You got to get that feedback. You got to run that own self-scout. How do I get better in those areas? Identify the opportunities to get better. And that sustained motivation of like, really, that for me, it comes down to purpose. Like, is what you're chasing aligned with your purpose? Because if it's not aligned with your purpose, you're going to have a really hard time, like when it's hard, to continue to have that motivation to sustain yourself. And I think all of us played for something, whether we knew it or not, in football that sustained us through the hard times that are inevitable in the game of football or sports in general. And it's no different. It's no different than business, right? Business is sports. It's just maybe not the adrenaline rush that we all had.
You know, I definitely not an adrenaline rush. You said something that was real like prevalent to me early on, just a couple of seconds ago. You said how like your whole time you're playing football, it's like it's our whole identity. And then the moment we're done, we're like, oh, I'm more than a football player, right? Yeah. And it's weird because a lot of times when you're a player, you're like, dude, I'm more than just a football player. I'm not just this. I don't want to be just categorized as that. Then when we're done, we're like, I mean, I used to be like a football player. Yeah. Like I still try and lean on those things. And so I've read, you talked about, and I want you to share the four things that athletes should focus on when they're done playing.
Yeah.
And how can they stay focused and continue to grind through this whole transition?
Yeah. Well, and even what you said, like that idea of like more than a football player, more than an athlete.
Yeah.
I think we feel like we need to say that because we think being an athlete is a liability,
right?
It's a liability for life after
sport.
Great point. And why do we feel that way? It's because outsiders tell us that we should feel that way.
Yes.
And again, being an athlete, and this is what we're trying to build with the post, is being an athlete is a massive competitive advantage to life and business, right? Like, and the data proves that. It proves that there's this tremendous performance. If you can transfer what you knew in sports to other things really well, then it's a massive competitive advantage. So like, don't shy away from that.
Yeah.
Don't run away from that. Don't apologize for that. Go like have full confidence in who you are. So PricewaterhouseCooper does a survey every year. It's called the CEO survey. CEO survey. And so they sent out a bunch of questions to CEOs across all different industries, and they ask a few questions. And one of the questions a few years ago is, what do you think is the biggest threat to the future of business? And 77% of CEOs said it's the lack of soft skills in the workforce. And they talk about leadership skills, problem solving skills, creativity skills. And athletes have a tremendous amount of soft skills, right? Especially leadership skills, problem solving skills. And so athletes are specific. They're already, you know, uniquely qualified to perform well in business. But that disparity, that gap between the athletes and non-athletes is only going to grow. And so our idea is like, well, let's support them, right? Let's be that place where all athletes go to when they're done. You know, all those members like 72 years old, once an athlete, always an athlete, right? We call it the athlete operating system. All those skills that we all have, again, like you should be leaning into that and not leaning away from that. But the four things, so when I, again, like self-awareness to me was such a crucial role in figuring out the struggle of my transition.
Right.
And so I thought about, okay, like why is this hard? And so number one, we talked about identity, right? Like the loss of my identity as a football player, at least seemingly it felt like I lost that identity.
Yes.
And so for us, like, no, like don't shed that identity. Continue to be who you are. Continue to identify those things that made you a great athlete and transfer them well. So don't shed that identity. A sense of purpose was the second one, which is a big one. I grew up in Texas too, where like football is your purpose, right? Yeah. And then going to play big time, you know, football at Florida State and then playing the NFL. Like, and I talked about this with school earlier, that like football was your purpose and everything around that served that purpose, right? I went to school so I could make the grades so I could stay on the field and play and stay eligible. I worked out. I treated my body well. It was all because I wanted to serve my purpose as a football player. That's a problem, right? Because football is going to end. So if your purpose is football, you're screwing yourself over because it's going to disappear. So what you have to identify, and it's even to your benefit, because I talked about it before, like your sustained motivation through hard times that are going to happen in any career, and especially in sports, your purpose has to be beyond the game.
Right.
Right. And so if my purpose is, hey, buying my mom a house or serving, you know, supporting my wife and my kids, whatever it is, that purpose doesn't go away when football is over. So you can just transfer that purpose into the next thing that you're doing. Right. So you've got to make sure that that's in line. The other thing is structure and routines, right? We're always being told what to do, where to do it, how to do it, when to do it at all times. And suddenly it's over. And so you have to look back. And I like one of the things I did, I kept all of my like workout books from like summer workouts, right? Yeah. Like, cause I need those structures.
I got at least 4 playbooks.
And so like, me too. Still got them.
So like, now you don't benefit from having an outsider telling you what to do. You have to take it upon yourself and be responsible enough to create your own structures and your own routines. But we thrived in a highly structured environment. So you have to create a highly structured environment for yourself when football is over. And then the last and probably the most important is the community side, right? Like we left the locker room, we lost it. And so you've got to be able to find a place that you can plug into and find that community, find that brotherhood, that sisterhood, whatever it is. And that's where we want to come in and serve that purpose of like, how do we give the infrastructure for that community to come together again? And not in a, again, not in a, hey, sport is a liability. We need to hold your hand to find your first job. Like, no, like from a position of empowerment of like, you know, we're trying to build an NFL roster, the best of the best that are coming together, leveraging each other to get better, just like we did in sports.
We'll be right back after a quick break. I want to switch topics real quick. I want to talk about some outdoorsmanship right now. So I
mean, you got a great beard.
Thank you.
You look outdoorsy.
What about mine? How does my beard look?
A little too shaped up.
Yours a little gray. So there you go. Anyway, my grandpops used to take me fishing all the time, right? Loved it as a kid. My dad taught me how to, you know, bait the worm and do all those cool things. I know you're a big fisherman you caught some fish. I want to know what's the biggest fish you've ever caught.
I did a lot of like saltwater fishing when I was at Florida State. So I've caught sharks and all that stuff. A biggest fish, it had to be a shark. I can't put a number on it. Bass, like my biggest bass is probably only like 5 pounds. I don't have some record bass that I caught. I love fly fishing.
That's kind of difficult though.
It's a whole skill set.
It's one of these kind of, you give it and then you got, it's like a flick of the wrist. It's kind of one of those things. Yeah.
It's, to me, it's like, it's art, right? It's not throwing a big old spinner bait out there and trying to catch a bass. It's like, it's very delicate. You're always doing it in beautiful places, right? Yeah. Like you're in mountains. And to me, it's much more like thought provoking, right? So like it's you got to identify like are the trout eating up top? Are they down below? You gotta identify like what they're eating and the size, right? So like not only do you have to get the color right, we got to get the size right. It's got to float the right way. And it's almost like it turns into a competition, right? Because a lot of it is you can see a fish, right? And it's like, all right, it's like 1-on-1, right? Like, am I going to beat you or are you going to beat me? Like, how, you know, it's like, and I love it. It's great. Now, I have 3 kids. I live in Manhattan, so I don't do it a lot now. I love fishing. Got into pheasant hunting when I was in Minnesota, which was fun. As much as I can in the urban jungle that is New York, you got to get out and find some space to go do things like that.
How do you enjoy living in New York?
I love the city.
Being from Texas.
Yeah. I love the city.
Yeah.
We would travel there in the off seasons. I kind of caught the New York City bug. I mean, never in the world did I imagine growing up in Texas that I would live in New York, let alone raise kids in New York. It's had a lot of benefits for my kids to see all different cultures and not sports wasn't everything. Like, because inherently with my wife working in sports and my background, like sports is a big deal in our household. So to have some balance there for them to go to the Met on a weekly basis and the Natural History Museum and all these, the Broadway shows has been to their benefit. Now, we're at the stage, my oldest is 9. Now they really want to get into sports, and like youth sports is not that great in New York City because there's not a lot of infrastructure, right? So like there's just not a lot of fields.
Not a lot of grass.
Yeah, not a lot of grass. And, you know, and not having a backyard with three kids is tough, and a dog. And so we're just, you know, we're masochists. We love to torture ourselves. And so we're figuring out, like, what does life look like, you know, in the next couple of years? Like, does it make sense to go back to Texas? It's almost like if we do, right, if we do leave New York, New York is such a unique place to live.
Right.
And everything's at your fingertips. I can't replicate that anywhere else. So I'm like, let's go the opposite end of the spectrum. Let's go get 30 acres outside of Dallas. And like, you know, my daughter wants a horse. And like my wife's sending me all these like little miniature cows and stuff that she wants to buy. But like maybe, and then maybe my kids will be somewhere in the middle between the both ends of the spectrum of urban and rural. And they'll be, you know, hopefully normal.
I love it.
I got it.
I love it.
So tell me this. You talked about your daughter. Could you maybe explain to us why you thought it was important or why you named your daughter after Bobby Bowden?
Oh, yeah. So good point. So it was my wife's idea. So everyone thinks it was my idea.
We're totally giving you credit that you
know. It was funny because even Coach Bowden before he passed, like had heard that we named our daughter Bowden. He's like, I've had a lot of dogs named Bowden and maybe some boys, but never had a girl named Bowden. So my dad played for Coach Bowden. My dad was the first one to go to college, and his family grew up in rural Georgia. And Coach Bowden gave him the opportunity, was a father figure to my dad. And so, you know, I wouldn't exist most likely without Coach Bowden. And then to go have the opportunity to go play for him and was a man that deeply cared much more about each player outside of football, right? Cared deeply about their faith and them as men and was father figures to so many guys that went through that locker room. And so just as a nod to the influence that he had on my life from the very beginning, thought it was important to honor him. And I think we try to speak like life in our own kids by how we name them. And naming your kid is freaking hard.
You know,
like,
so difficult.
There's a lot of pressure on like getting it right.
You got to get it right.
And so, you know, so it was my wife that brought it up. And so we did it. We call her Scout, but her legal name is Bowden. We call her Scout from To Kill a Mockingbird, the girl in that book. Again, another thing of like, you know, we want her to be like this girl, but also Coach Bowden. So, it's naming a kid is not easy.
Oh,
yeah.
Hold on. You can't just say that. Now we got to know all the names and why they were hard.
So my daughter is, Bowden St. Clair. We call her Scout. My son, who's our middle, his name is Robinson True. We named after Jackie Robinson and David Robinson.
Okay.
I like that.
But we call him True. And
were you a Spurs fan? Like
I was not. My wife knows David and just awesome. I don't know if you've ever been around him. Awesome dude.
I've heard nothing.
Tall guy.
Dude, the most emasculine. Like, I'm like, hi. You know,
I saw him like 7th grade. Was like, oh, yeah.
You were, like his hands, like fully, he didn't shake as hard as Adrian, but like fully engulfed my hand. I was like, I'm like a little boy, you know? It's like, and so, you know, what obviously Jackie did for sports and for society and what David represents, you know, want to name our son Robinson, and then our daughter, our youngest daughter's name is Price. That comes from a Bible verse of you were bought with a price. You're not your own, you're bought with a price. And so that idea that, you know, again, what is your purpose? It's much deeper than all the things that we collectively do on a daily basis.
Well, you kind of already set the tone and purpose when you name them these things.
Yeah,
and then you tell them these stories, they will naturally start to fall in line. That's what it is.
Y'all are killing me in the name game. Your kids got cool names. They're named after like cities and places.
Foreign cities.
Foreign
cities. Now all Olympic cities as well.
Nice.
So we got London, Sydney, Roman the second, which is of course Rome.
Yeah.
And then Seoul, South Korea.
That's awesome.
So we're all over the place too.
I think I watched an episode of like Keeping Up with the Kardashians, and I thought it was kind of cool. They all started with K's. So I was like, well, I won't do K's. I'm going to just do T's. So all my kids' names start with T's.
They do.
That's how I came up with that. But yeah, I wish I would have thought a little bit outside the box on that a little bit.
It was not me. It was my wife. I'm not taking credit for that.
You're kind of putting me in the shade.
This is awesome that we got Christian to not take credit because it's really hard because quarterbacks get a lot of credit sometimes.
Yeah.
That sometimes they just hand the ball off. They get a lot of credit. And then sometimes they get a lot of blame when it's not their fault either. So it's just part of it. But I appreciate you being open about that.
You've had a lot of success on the field, off the field, in your transition. If you could name four people who had an influential time in your life to help you get to where you are right now, who would those four people be on your Mount Rushmore?
Yeah, both my parents. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they set the tone very early on.
We'll count that as one.
Yeah, that's one thing. I also wanted to get two out of
it. All right, well, go ahead.
You can get two. Fine. All right. My wife has been, from the very beginning, I think, you know, holding me to a really high standard and, mm-hmm. and pushing me. And, you know, not, I think sometimes, especially when you're done playing, you feel like you earn the right to coast for a little bit, you know? And my wife's like, nope, you're getting your butt off the couch. And so she's pushed me really hard, you know, Coach Bowden, obviously. And then Jimbo, you know, so Jimbo came in as my offensive coordinator at Florida State my second year and then became the head coach my last year when Coach Bowden left. And I definitely wouldn't have made it to the NFL without him. I think it was funny, like my freshman year at Florida State, had a really hard time, thought about transferring. They changed the offensive coaching staff and Jimbo came in and felt like I had a fresh start. And I, you know, that first spring practice, I had a great practice, made a great first impression on him. And I think ever since then, I think he saw something in me and just invested a lot of his time and energy in me and developing my career. And so, yeah, that would be four.
Shout out to Jimbo, who's probably just sitting on the couch eating really nice.
I want that contract.
You know what I mean?
Like, pretty good contract.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Talking about that one. But yeah. Christian, man, thank you, man. Thank you for blessing us with your time and coming through, talking to us about your transition. Because the one thing that Peanut and I talk about all the time, the more and more we've done this podcast, the more and more we have learned that, man, it really is a transitional period. And none of us know how to get through it. Like, it doesn't come with directions. There is no right or wrong answer. But sitting down and talking about it and sharing your story and your path only allows and probably gives you more strength because, like, man, we aren't the only ones. And you're just one of the other ones that all have to go through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Appreciate you on that.
Yeah, man. Are you going to get us up out of here?
No, that's your job.
Okay, man. Well, here we go.
I ain't got the juice. You got the juice.
It's okay, because yesterday you kind of had the juice. All right. Well, here, man, first and foremost, thank you as always, Christian, coming through, my man Peanut, and all of you guys that out there, whether you're listening or viewing us, wherever you pick up your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, thank you guys for always giving us a 5-star rating. Give us a review. Click that follow button. Leave us a couple comments. That's how we get our viewership up. So thank you for always tuning in. Peanut, get us up out of here, man. Tell the people where to catch us at next.
Well, make sure you got to tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a
friend.
Okay. All right. I'm Peanut. That's Christian. That's my Uncle Rome. Hey, man, this is the NFL Player Second Acts Podcast.
We out.